Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Caitlin Murray, who is known to her 1.4 million Instagram followers as Big Time Adulting. People love her for her unfiltered takes and stories about parenting and for voicing the frustrations and joys of being a mom. Caitlin, in your own words, who is Caitlin Murray and what does she do?
Oh, wow. What a big question to ask of somebody to...
It's a big one.
Neatly describe who they are. I am just a regular person who turned to Instagram for a creative outlet. And I was actually the reason why I really got started on Instagram was because I had been writing a blog, if you will, about, it was really more of like an email correspondence to family and friends about my son who was in treatment for leukemia. And I was hoping, I was just really enjoying this writing process during that time and just putting a lot of my thoughts on paper and sharing with family and friends in a, you know, anecdotal, somewhat humorous way, given the content. And I was approached by somebody who was an editor that lived in our town and sort of asked about would I be interested in a book. And at that time, it was just me and writing these like kind of silly small blog emails, not silly, but whatever. And the publishing company that she works with, was sort of like, it's fine. You know, the writing is fine, but she doesn't have any following. So we're not going to give her a book deal, like go kick rocks, you know? So I was like, well, maybe I'll start an Instagram page. And so at that point I was still working. I was pregnant with my third child. I had a, 5-year-old who was in treatment for leukemia and a 3-year-old. And I just, I had no fucks left to give. And so I just came to Instagram and started sharing my inner thoughts on motherhood and the challenges of just really everyday life as a mom. Not really so much to do with like the deeper, more challenging things that I was facing at that time with my son, but, just gave me this opportunity, I think, that to be free and honest about all of the hard parts of being a mom.
It was like a steam valve.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's sort of who I am as an Instagram, you know, person entity. Yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I'm a daughter and a sister and a friend and a wife, and all of that. So
the multifaceted Caitlin Murray. Okay. A lot to get to do there. First though, how did you land on the name Big Time Adulting? What does Big Time Adulting mean?
I guess like, at the time, I think adulting was sort of like this funny word, like people, we're really adulting today.
You say
or
at
whatever.
The time too, this was like 6 years ago you started an Instagram account.
Yeah. And that was actually the name of the name I gave my blog. So it was definitely because I think Instagram was maybe closer to 5 years ago and the blog was about a year prior to that. So, and what I was doing, like, as I described, caretaking for my son, my sick son and my 3-year-old daughter, and then my being pregnant with a third and, you know, all of the other stuff. I was like, big time adulting. So
not like stocking the fridge fully, whatever, hashtag adulting. This is like,
yeah, I was like, yeah, we were apartment hunting today, adulting. So anyway, that's how I kind of landed on it. It was just a little bit of a humorous take on that trendy term.
Yeah. So going back to the very beginning, like what you were doing at the start, like what started it all is your son was sick and you started writing these emails that were like almost like a private newsletter to like friends and family, keeping them in the loop about what was going on with your son and the health. And so like at the beginning, there's that clear audience of like, I don't know, a couple dozen or however many people who are very close to you in your life. And now it's 1.4 million people on Instagram, plus however many others. So I guess my question is like, how has your audience, who is your audience today? Who would you describe your audience as today? Like just parents, other moms, who are they?
Well, thanks to analytics features on Instagram, I know exactly who my audience is. It's mostly women, like ages, and the majority are ages 35 to 44. And then like my next biggest age group is the 25 to 34 age range. And then I have a couple of youngsters and a couple of, you know, I don't want to say old timers, but
seasoned,
more mature. Yes, generations. And they're like 95% women. And I assume, you know, of that, 99% parents or mothers. Yeah, that's the sort of demographic that I'm reaching.
How has it like evolved? Like, I mean, going from, again, like, that's, you know, now there's like 1.4 million other like women following you. And then at the start, it was just a couple dozen people. Like,
yeah,
I guess like at the beginning, how did it start to gain traction once you like started the Instagram account? And who were those people who were like engaging with the post?
Yeah, it's a good question. So like when I first started out, my goal was to build an audience. And so I really had no experience in doing this before whatsoever. I was not a social media person in that type of world at all. So, very green when it comes to any of that stuff. And I didn't use any like services or people to help me sort of strategize on ways to grow an audience. Yeah, it was just me. But I mean, I was doing plenty of my own research, just like reading all the articles I could find online about what to do, how to post, how frequently to post. And, you know, you get a lot of sort of, I mean, I guess maybe obvious and maybe not obvious to people answers of just like regular posting, posting frequently, frequently and regularly. So like in terms of time of day, all of that shit, you know, and, you know, being active on stories as well as posts and, connecting with like-minded accounts. So, you know, commenting on people's accounts that were posting content that's sort of similar to yours in hopes of getting noticed by other accounts that either are following them or by that account itself. Like, oh, who's this person? That was a funny comment.
Did you start like building like, I don't know, connections, relationships, like kind of just natural community with other people? Yeah. Tell me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I started reaching out to other accounts who were like mine, at least in theory, like in terms of mindset, I guess. But, at this point, this was like prior to Reels, it was all just posts on Instagram. So there was really like very, very little video content. And a lot of the accounts that I was sort of interacting with were kind of meme like accounts about motherhood, or just like small written pieces that they had like original content of theirs, but just, you know, like
text posts.
One or two words. Yeah. Text posts. And, I guess I just found a group of people that were similar to me. And what happens is if you find people who are like that and who have, you know, accounts that are growing or that they're trying to grow, when your content is shared, that's how you grow. So like creating relatable content that can be shareable is the way to gain an audience. And so I kind of figured that out, in the way that I noticed that if I was interacting with a friend on Instagram, a like-minded account, if you will, and they shared my post, that I would get a certain number of new followers that day. And I was like, oh, okay, this whole thing kind of works. And then it got to the point for me where sharing other people's content wasn't really worth it for my account anymore, because
you started to like break out of the pack a little
bit. Yeah. Like I just, my own content was getting shared enough organically that way that, it made more sense for me to just create all my own content and not, you know, make it like a conglomerate of other people's content and stuff. So that was maybe a couple of months in where I just started focusing on all my own stuff. And, Yeah, it's just that's the way it goes. You just if you do show up and consistently create content that is relatable enough that people will share it and your audience will grow. And then there's some things that feel completely out of your control, like the algorithm.
Yeah, it's like I feel like all that's really in control is like you said, like posting frequently, high volume, consistently, and like everything else is kind of like, I mean, there's things you can do. But anyways, I want to talk about like, again, one more thing about the evolution of the project before we move on. So when I was researching you, I saw kind of like 10,000 foot view, four chapters. And tell me if you think this is right. So the first is early days, which is like 2017 to 2018. It's when you're writing those emails, you're starting to post them as a blog. So that's the early days chapter. And then Instagram, you wanted to write a book, but the publisher told you build an audience first. You start an Instagram, all these text posts, the stuff you were just talking about, like those early days of growth. And that's 2018 to 2020. And then Reels, I think, is like chapter three. And that's probably 22 to 2021. Instagram introduces Reels and you like, that's your niche. It's like you find your groove and you're like, you're doing your dances, you're, you know, telling your jokes, you're saying like, wow, motherhood is fucking hard. And people love it and people love you and you really start to blow up. And I don't know the exact numbers, but that's chapter three. And I feel like that's kind of has a lot of weight. And then where we are now, chapter four is like, you built that audience and now it's turning that audience into a business. This includes like the podcast, the newsletter. I think you've got a few other things up your sleeve that we can talk about later. Probably when you start working with the agency. So that's like 2022 to now. Is that like a fair assessment of like four chapters of your project?
I would say that that is right on the fucking money.
I try.
You did a great job. Yes, that's totally following the path that I've been on. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious then, like the transition between chapters three and four, like the Reels where you really start catching fire and then like, okay, I've got something, like I've captured this audience. Let's turn it into a business. When does that transition start happening and how?
Yeah. I mean, I was sort of mentioning this to you before we got recording about like, my goal was never to become an influencer. So, it wasn't to get on Instagram, build an audience and then start, you know, pushing a lot of other people's products to make money. Which is all well and good if that's what you want to do. And it's definitely an effective way to monetize your audience. It's just not what I had set out to do. So I guess I have been playing the long game to a certain extent by not taking very few, if any, advertising opportunities for probably the first 4 years. And at that point, once I had a more significant audience size, you know, I was getting a lot of emails, just a lot of outreach and people wanting to collaborate with you and do this or that and other things. And that's when I sort of started thinking about partnering up with an agency. And I had found these wonderful two women, Kat Peterson and Sam Riley, who reached out to me from their very like bespoke agency that they run. They're Canadians and two moms, and they understand like my content and who I am. And they work very hands-on with the people that they take on and had a lot of similar visions that I did. And when we spoke, and it was just like a really lucky, awesome fit. So that was at the around about a year ago, a little over a year ago, when I started working with Kat and Sam. And from that point on, that's really when my audience has sort of started to morph into a business.
Mm-hmm. I think like one thing I always think about with creators is like, there's kind of two places you can come from. It's either the really create, like the pure creative side, which I would characterize you as that, like just creative talent. And then there's like the business and marketing side. And I think, you know, at a certain point you can build an audience off like pure creative talent, but then if you want to keep it going, you have to either hire somebody who comes from like the business marketing side, which is what you've done with the agency, or like you upskill to that way. But I think like it's, I don't know. I always am really attracted to the stories of like the more creative side who then like hires out for that. So two questions about that. Like one, how did, like, what did hiring Kat and Sam, hiring an agency, change for you? Like immediately how, like, you know, let's say the first 3 months after you start working with them, like how do things change for you once you start? And actually also before you answer that, how big was your audience? And then how did things start changing once you started working with them?
Yeah, I think my audience size when I signed on with Kat and Sam was maybe around 500,000. I think it was just, it was a mental shift for me to take this leap into signing on with a partnership, because it was me. It was not just me doing my own creative thing anymore. Like I was somewhat accountable, you know, at mm-hmm. this point, and I'm making a decision to take all of what I've built more seriously, which is hard because there is that like imposter syndrome that creeps in for you as a creator and as a creative person that way. That's like, okay, I have these bigger ideas and I really want to do them and I think I can, but wait a second, maybe I can't. Maybe I suck at this. Like maybe somebody else would be better. Why me? You know? And so that's definitely what happened for me at that time. And this is similar to like I played sports like in college and stuff. And so I think it's like similar to like that athlete mentality where you kind of like could psych yourself out a little bit before a game. And then at some point you just have to flip a switch and be like, fuck it. Yeah. You know, I'm just going to go out there and leave it all on the field and do my best and hope for a win, you know? And if this one thing isn't a win, then I'm going to learn from that loss.
I love that you said this. Cause like I interviewed somebody last week, a few times I've like ask people who I talk to who are athletes, like I feel like it's a very similar mindset to like athlete being a creator. So I love that you brought it up organically, because that's like, yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt, but fully agree.
No, it's great. I mean, there's just so many wonderful ways to use sports for life analogies. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of where I was mentally at that time and where I still go. You know, every now and again, because there is so much that does feel a little bit out of your control as like a content creator for social media. It's like this Instagram as an entity is something I have no control over, right? Like sometimes, like there was one day towards the end of last year, the year before, I forget now, that my account just like disappeared for a day. Like it was just gone. You know, I wasn't like in the doghouse. I didn't like violate anything, but it was just, there was some, you know, glitch within the Meta system and my account had disappeared. And I was like, well, I guess that's it, you know, on to the next thing or whatever. And then, you know, a few hours later, there was news articles popping up like Instagram experiencing blah, blah, blah. So I was like, okay, so I guess maybe I will get my account back and keep going, you know. But
and now you're advertising for Meta, so that's the whole
I did a Mother's Day campaign with Meta, so yeah, which feels nice because I've been able to meet some people who work for Meta and it's nice to have like a person-to-person contact with this sort of
This reminds me, somebody I spoke to like a month or so ago, this guy, Ryan Broderick, he's kind of a tech journalist. He's a tech journalist. Anyways, he was describing, I asked him like, what does it mean to be a creator? And his kind of pithy instant one-liner, which I kind of agree with, was you're an Uber driver for posts, basically, which is just to say that it's like this entity and you're kind of like, you know, you're generating revenue for them sort of, but you're also like doing something for yourself. And I don't know, it's this like strange relationship of like being a gig worker for content in a way. Anyways, I want to go back to audience stuff for a bit. I'm really curious about your relationship with your audience, because like looking through your Instagram posts, the comment sections are all very active. And it's people who are saying like, thank you for this, like same, like you're keeping it real. I love this. Like, wow, I'm so glad I found you. So rabid fans, I guess. Tell me more about your relationship with your audience, maybe on both kind of that mass level, like as a whole. But then I'm also curious about any individual like interactions you've had and such.
Yeah. So on the mass level, I would say I feel like 90%+ of what I experience in the comments section and in my DMs is very positive, supportive, validating, awesome community. And, you know, it's funny because going into this, I don't know if it's like my age or just a thing in general, like I wouldn't have ever expected to have really genuine connections forming with anyone via an online relationship, like via a social media. I mean, I understand how people meet like on dating websites and stuff like that. That's like a, okay, I'm interested in this and you're interested in this, like let's get together, whatever. But social media is just like, we don't, I'm not here to date you, you know, we're a bunch of moms that we're just, but commiserating. But yeah, so there's definitely that like wonderful, supportive, validating feeling that I get from seeing a lot of what the people who are following me say on my posts or write to me privately on a DM. And then, or even sometimes email me or something, which I can't always get to everything, but I try to read a lot of it.
A lot of people. I can't imagine even getting to all of that.
It's a lot of people. Yeah. And then there's the negative side that there's always going to be some portion of the interweb who does not like you or they are a bot or something random out there. Just being nasty in the comment section. And that's something that when I started out used to get under my skin a lot more. And now I can just completely laugh about it and not engage. And it's like, I'm like, it's you, it's not me, it's okay. And I don't have to, and not everybody has to like me. It's like, it's okay. You know, like I've come to terms with that. You can't be everybody's cup of tea and you don't, I don't want to be.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that goes back to like why you've been successful is like you don't give a fuck, as you literally say so often. I think too, like with the trolls, I didn't like search so deep, but I looked at like, I don't know, 5 or 6 different posts looking for troll comments on your Instagram, and I couldn't find any. And I wasn't sure if it's like you were deleting them or
no, I've let it rip. I'm like, all press is good press, whatever. Yeah. But I guess there are some like, I don't know. It's just funny. Today I was scrolling through like my feed, whatever updates, likes, comments, things like that. And, what did I see? Somebody had written, I had done a post a few weeks ago that's gone pretty viral about travel sports and, how all consuming they are and the audacity of the timing of these sports games to be like at night on the weekends and how I was going to start to just like hand out martinis on the sidelines and stuff for parents. And,
tip top kid cocktails. They're great. Great martinis.
Somebody wrote today, you look like an alcoholic. And I was just like, it was like 6 o'clock in the morning. I opened it up. I had just woken up and I was like, just laughing my ass off in bed at that. I was like, I don't know. Maybe I do look like an alcoholic because I look tired all the time on these posts. But, or it's just, you know, it's one of those things that there are bots and like, comments that are like purposefully nasty to engage you and whatever. So
yeah, I got a comment on one of our reels today that was just like mid. I was like, well, I'm not gonna comment on that, you know. Yeah, that's what you want. Anyways, I want to go back to audience growth stuff. So we've covered a little bit of this already, but I want to get a little more granular. So 0 to 1.4 million on Instagram in it's like 5.5 years now.
Yeah.
And I did the math. As of yesterday, you had sent 1,033 Instagram posts in 1,985 days. So 0.52 grid posts every day for 5.5 years. That's a lot.
Sorry, what is that again? 0. What?
0.5. Basically every other day. 0.52 grid posts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Anyways. Oh, wait, what were you going to say?
I don't know. It is. I mean, I love that you have this information. It's wonderful.
I gotta. You know.
Yeah. I don't know. Go ahead. Ask okay, your
yeah,
question.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I was looking for, you know, breadcrumbs of like, when was your following this amount? And so right now it's 1.4. I think you said when you started working with the agency, it was of like about 500,000. And that was about mm-hmm. a year ago. Mm-hmm. I saw that in June or so last year, you'd hit 1 million. Mm-hmm. So you've grown already 40% in just under a year. And sounds like it was like 100% in just a few months yeah. at that point. And then I think the last thing I found was like 2020. So right when Reels were launching, you had 70,000. So we don't have to like comb through all that step by step. But what I am curious about is if there were any inflection points when it was like, you were kind of, you know, just steady and then boom, steady, boom, whatever. Any big moments where you were like, damn, I just grew a lot and why?
Like September or October, end of September 2022. I think I was maybe around 100,000 followers or something like that. And by July of 2023, I had hit 1 million. So it was like kind of like getting 100,000 followers a month for a while or something around something wow. like that. Yeah. So that was 100% like the time of the most explosive growth of, I always had a really high engagement rate. So I had a lot of people commenting and a lot of people liking, my posts since the time that I started. So I always felt kind of good about that. And I think that always kind of also kept me going and kept me motivated to keep posting. Cause I wasn't really focused on like an end goal of what an audience size would be in my mind at all. Just sort of focused in more on creating content that my current audience was enjoying. And then at that point in 2022, in like the fall of 2022, my account just really began to explode. It was like one viral post that went bigger than any other posts I had ever made. And
were you posting more or was it just
no, kind of I think I was posting shifted. Less, honestly. You really go through ebbs and flows that way as a yeah. creator too. You know, it's like, maybe you're just like not coming up with as many ideas this week as you had last week. And it's all spontaneous. And like, you don't really have control. It's one of these things where sometimes I'm like, am I ever going to really run out of shit to say, you know, like, I don't know, what I'm going to post about next week. You know, it's just, it's all off of the cuff pretty much. Mm-hmm. So, it's pretty spontaneous, but, if I don't have something to say, I don't force it. So, yeah. When you said about the 0.52 posts a day, it's definitely not like always been every other day. Like sometimes at the beginning I was posting like so frequently, sometimes I was posting more than once a day. Mm-hmm. And then by that point, maybe like sometimes now I usually post maybe like twice a week, three times a week or something like that. So, but if I feel like I want to post more, then I do. And then if I don't, then I don't. Cause at this point it's, I don't know that like the frequency is as important for me as it once was.
You've got the audience. And when you send out the signal, you know, they're there to comment.
Well,
to
you know, I don't want to be cocky. I have to still create.
Yeah, let me be cocky for you. No, I don't know. I think I mean, in all seriousness, like not to be like, you know, braggy about it. It's like that is the thing. Like you've built the audience, you've built the expectation, you've built the brand. It's like, you don't need to, you know, obviously it would be great to grow your audience more and you will, but it's like, that's not necessarily the major priority anymore. At a certain point, you don't need to play the same game that you played 5 years ago. Anyways, on to the next thing, podcast. So you have a podcast that I think you've done 50 episodes of. Maybe there's one or two more that were deleted or something. But I think you started in November 2021 and did about a little inconsistently, like 1 to 4 a month until you stopped 2 months ago. I don't know what the story is there. So tell me why you started the podcast, and if you have stopped, why?
Yeah, so I started the podcast because for a couple of reasons. I think number one was that I felt like I would enjoy sharing a little bit more long form content, like just being able to get a little bit deeper into topics of that, you know, ignited me. And
this was, wait, also real quick, this was like a year, you started like a year after you'd started doing Reels. So this is like a year into like you really finding your groove of your kind of spoken word videos, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. As I guess. Yeah. I honestly can't remember, but I believe you because you seem to know a lot about this, which is interesting.
Too much.
No, it's cool. And yeah, so anyway, when I started, it was just really for fun. I had like a random like producer that I had never met that I would just, you know, upload my episodes to, and she would, I don't know, tinker with them a little bit and put them out into the universe. Yeah. put them into the idea machine. And then, anyway, I just was like kind of having some fun with that, but then it was nothing I had ever like, it was really just for me. I didn't even know, you know, I wasn't watching the analytics of it or any of that. I just was talking and having random guests come on. And then, I stopped for a little while and I just lost the fervor for it. And about the same time, or similar to around the same time as I was linking up with Kat and Sam, somebody, another podcast producer, had reached out to me about working together. And she really just was just like, I really love your Instagram content. I saw you used to have a podcast. I'd love to help you get it back up and started. And just like coming from an incredibly altruistic place of just wanting to work together and help me get a podcast up and running again. So we did that. And that was about a year ago. And we sort of just we've tinkered with like a few different formats for it and ideas on how to make it better and change it and acquire like a more viral listening situation, because it's really podcasting's hard. Like it's hard to, So it's hard to like, you know, you can have your core audience or however many people that is that will come back and listen to you every week because they just like to listen to you. But to really break out and grow beyond that takes something different. You know, you have to do something different. So it's sort of toying with ideas of things to do that way. In my mind, like maybe an angle, like what it's kind of like, okay, I have this audience. What am I going to do with it? What is going to be the thing for me? So, you know, I've toyed with podcast as one of those things that could be the thing. But at the end of the day, I think it was like just taking up a little bit more time and creative energy for me that I felt like was maybe better channeled somewhere else. So I am on a podcast pause right now, but I feel like I could come back with it, but I would probably come back with a podcast in like a totally different capacity, like not really just breaking down stuff about motherhood and stuff. It would have some sort of a unique angle to it.
This makes sense. I mean, it's like as your concept evolves, as you turn this into a business, it's like now you're in the stage of like, well, what is the really monetizable thing that I do? Like what about me can I really sell other than just like to millions of people watching me on Instagram? What is the logical, you know, next step in that I see is the newsletter, which when I looked on your Beehive archive, I saw that you've had it up since February. You've done it like every Tuesday since February. Did you start it before, or was that like the origin story?
No, that's so we did a little bit of we were on Squarespace for a few months prior to moving over to Beehive. And so I'll go back. Let me rewind just to say one last thing about the podcast and the platform as a platform. And and just sort of what you were saying at the beginning of this, which is I think what a lot of creators or people in like the multimedia, whatever business will understand that it's nice to have a diversified way to reach your audience. Right. And this whole concept of a flywheel of like, mm-hmm. you push your newsletter people to your Instagram and your Instagram people to your podcast and whatever, you know,
you've got the ads and the Instagram and the newsletter and the products that you, blah, 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 the flywheel.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, and then some people, not everybody wants to be on people maybe taking breaks from social media. So mm-hmm. like they can come check you out on your newsletter or your mm-hmm. podcast if they want. So to have like multiple avenues of ways to, for people to consume your content, if you will. Mm-hmm. So with that, and because I like to write so much, we talked about, you know, this idea of a newsletter, but I always felt like the word newsletter was like, oh God, it's like a homework assignment. Like,
yeah.
And then like, I, you know, moms are just so busy, like who has time to read a newsletter, you know? So my thought was originally to maybe just do this like once a month, more publication, almost like a magazine. E-magazine. Yeah. E-magazine. Which was good. I think that people really liked that too. But in terms of like creating a business around it, it seemed like having a more regular publication, once like weekly type thing, keeps people a little more engaged. Which is just something that we're like kind of playing with, and I'm not even sure that that's the answer, but it also, so basically then to put something out weekly is a little bit more of a heavy lift.
Yeah, I know.
So, we kind of pared down the content a little bit to sort of just share in like a linking way rather than sort of in more editorial way to a couple of other pieces of content that might have shown up in like the e-magazine format, but a little bit more long. Anyway, this is, yeah. I feel like I'm being so.
No. Well, so let's get into the newsletter. So yeah. I read through all the issues that you've put out so far, which I think is including today, it's 14. At least the ones on Beehive. It's like a missive from you. It's like a little update, you know, which like newsletters can be so many different things. And that's what I talk about here. But I think yours is like, is really what a newsletter is it's a one to many email, you know, whatever your newsletter is, that's what it is. That's what all newsletters are. It's one person or one organization, whatever, sending a newsletter to, you know, however many people, addressed to a group. And yours is just very chill. It's just like the same voice that like you have on social media. It's your character really comes through. And then it's like a few links. And one thing I try to do with my newsletter is like consistent, but not predictable. And I think that's something you nail as well, where you have the, I forget what you call the little section. What's the little section called at the end with like the links?
Oh, wait, I have it here.
We got to say it. There's more.
There's more. There's more. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And your there's more section is always different. Like you've got make, listen, home, etc. I don't know. And now I guess I'm just rambling about what your newsletter is. I think it's a good concept that's consistent but not predictable, which is what I think newsletters should be.
Good to
questions
know.
About it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my theory. A few questions about it. What does the newsletter do for you? Like in the way, going back to that quote I shared, that was your quote from like a year ago about like this whole thing giving you this autonomy and this purpose. What does the newsletter do for you?
Yeah. So it's a different way for me to share a thought, I would say, like similar to it's, I guess, long form written. It's not that long and it's a quick read, but it's written content. So I get a chance to sort of examine a thought a little bit more deeply. Which is sort of similar to what I was saying about why I did the podcast, to like examine those thoughts a little bit more deeply and talk it out a little bit more. This is more brief. The newsletter is more brief than, you know, a 1 hour podcast or a 30 minute podcast or whatever it was. But, I like to share that way. I like to create that type of content and I enjoy writing so much that, it felt like a really easy thing for me to do in a way. It's one of those things where you do it until it doesn't work for you, yeah. You know,
like the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's also like, it's a business experiment as mm-hmm. well. So it's, and I'm going into it with the same mindset as I did with starting my Instagram, which is just that I'm going to put some content out and create some content that is authentic to me, that I enjoy creating. And if you build it, they will come, right? If it is good, you know, yeah. If people do like it, then they'll continue to come back and open your newsletter and enjoy the content that you created for them. And I don't know what's going to happen with it. It's a free newsletter that I have not monetized yet. So we'll see
where that goes.
Yeah.
Couple more questions about that. One, like, so if you build it, they will come. How are you attracting them to the newsletter? Is it just like I saw today, newsletter came out today. You had a little video. You're like, check it out. I have this funny review about leggings in the newsletter today. Here's the link. Is that basically it? You just like in your stories, you put it out there and people come?
Yeah. I talk about it like once a week in my stories, which is, you know, as often as it comes out. So another thing I've been doing is getting the audience involved mm-hmm. with creating playlists, which has been fun because I'll give them a theme and then like put a question or like in a comments box on a story where they can share a song of their choice. And then at the end of the day, I'll go through and create a playlist based off of the audience requests. And I think that's kind of fun because people can come and see if their song is on the playlist. And I had to make a little announcement about that recently because you get so many requests that like I would be making a playlist till next Tuesday if I put them all on there. But so I had to, and you have to curate it a little bit. It can't like the music choices can't hop around too much or else it's like a, you know, little bit schizophrenic.
You gotta be the DJ. Well, I think so this playlist thing too, I thought that was really interesting. I haven't really seen anybody do this before where it's like, it's like you've got your Spotify page, I think has like 1200 followers, and then you've got 7 public playlists right now. I think they each have like anywhere from like 300 to 800 followers. And so I was really curious to learn more about this. I feel like music is so much part of your thing because when I was like looking around interviews, et cetera, your dancing videos come up a lot. People love, this is like one of your things. Like you do your like crazy dances and it's this whole thing about like Caitlin expressing herself and like being just like unabashedly you, right? And so I think music is tied up in that, which only occurred to me as you started talking about this, as like that being such a way for your audience to connect with you and relate to you. And I really like this user submitted thing. I guess I don't know if there's a question in here, but I've never seen anybody do that before. I don't know, do you have anything more to say about the playlist?
It is one of those things where, because I just dance around like a maniac so often on social media, that people would ask me for my playlist. You know, what's that song? Where's your playlist? I want your playlist. And so I figured that adding that as like a piece of content to a newsletter would be an attraction for people to come.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, and who doesn't want just like, it's fun, easy. Check out this playlist. Why not? You know? So that was something that I thought would be a good incentive.
No, that's awesome. Last question about the newsletter. As much as you're comfortable sharing, I would love to hear stats, subscribers, open rate, click rate for the newsletter.
Yeah. Let's see. I have up to date stats
right
here for you. All right. So active subscribers, 20,000, a little over 20,000, about 20,336, not about exactly. That's exactly it.
It's pretty good for promoting once a week on your Instagram story.
Yeah, I think that I should probably be promoting it a little bit more often, which is something that I'm not good about. I'm not good about like self-promoting anything. So, but I really enjoy the newsletter and it's like a piece of free content for people. So I shouldn't feel bad pushing it.
No, my advice to you, I didn't come up with this, but it's something I think about a lot. You don't kill the part of yourself that's cringe. Kill the part of yourself that cringes.
Ooh, yes. Okay. I like that. I've never heard that before.
It's good advice.
Kill the part of yourself that cringes. That's good. I mean, you would think that I am pretty good at that, given if you've seen me dancing around on my Instagram before. And then click rate, 17%. I don't know what that even means, though, to
That's
be
incredibly
honest.
Incredibly good.
So, but I don't have, what does that mean? What is the click rate?
So what that is the percentage of people who opened the newsletter who are then clicking on any link in the newsletter. And the industry average is like 2%.
Oh, okay. Great.
So
well, I don't have that many links.
That's not true. I mean, I'm looking at today's issue and okay, let's count. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Oh, all right. Well, this is unusual because this is,
But you usually have like 3 to 5 in the There's More section, which is, I mean, that means that like people are appreciating what you're putting. 17% is very high.
Okay, good. Great. Honestly,
what about the open rate?
Wonderful to know. So my general open rate hovers a little over 70%.
Also incredibly good. That's like, I think industry average is like 30 to 40.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So that's great. Cool. See, like this is again, so another thing that I guess this goes back to what I was saying about like my Instagram, originally, which is, because I have my agents, they know this stuff. I don't know these like analytics and the numbers, but they're like, it's going great. It's going really well for you. So, I know from them, I have, a certain amount of confidence about the numbers or that people are enjoying this content, right? So it's like similar to analyzing what your engagement rate would be on Instagram. So, you know, while I don't compete with top newsletters right now with, audience sizes, I feel like if I keep producing content that I enjoy producing that people like, that maybe it will get there. Yeah. So,
I mean, and like all the different pathways you could follow and like things this could become, like clearly there's a demand for your voice in newsletter form. Like, I don't know, maybe you become like the next like talk show, talking head expert on parenting. And then you have like 200,000 subscribers to your twice weekly newsleter about like all of the things young parents need to, I don't know.
Let me know if you are putting together a show.
You can coach me from Beehive.
I'll be happy to interview for the role of host.
Yeah.
I would love to host a TV show, actually. It would be so fun.
Yeah. So I want to get into that kind of thing shortly, but before we do, last thing about kind of current state of the business. How do you monetize just across your whole project? What are some of the different ways you monetize?
Yeah. So right now, the number one form of monetization for me are the few brand deals that I've accepted. I really have only worked with a pretty small number of brands, and I'm fairly particular about who I will say yes to, which
you like.
It's got to be something I like and that has like that I believe there's integrity to the brand itself. Like say there's like a brand that has like multiple products under its own umbrella and I'm not a huge fan of every single one of their products or whatever personally, just for taste reasons or something like that. If the brand, I feel like if there's integrity behind the brand, I'm still good with like partnering with a brand like that. If I actually enjoy something that they produce or make. So that's my number one way of monetization right now. And then I'm breaking into some other things like speaking engagements, which is cool. I should be having some book news pretty soon.
The speaking gigs, have you done any of those yet? How have those been like?
I've done a handful of those types of things and I enjoy that a lot. I kind of like a live audience. It's fun. Gets you excited. And And then, which is also surreal because you're behind, I'm behind my phone all the time, you know, so it's nice to actually be in front of people. And then, I should be, I should have some news about a book pretty soon, and, which is pretty awesome. And then I'll have to like really sit down and write a fucking book. But I'm honestly, I'm very much looking forward to that right now, which is a really easy thing to say for somebody who hasn't started writing their book yet, but.
Well, no, that's awesome though. And I was curious to ask about that because like everything I could, all the interviews I found with you, et cetera, like back to the very beginning, I mean, that's why you started the Instagram account. You wanted to build an audience for a book. And then like a few years into it, some interview from I think 3 years ago or so, you were like, yeah, I still want to write a book, but like, I don't know when I'm going to have time to write a book. So it seems like it's kind of your white whale. So it's cool to hear that it's coming to fruition.
Yeah, it feels very cool. It's one of those things that, again, with like imposter syndrome and stuff like that, like why, you know, do I really need to write a book? Why do I need to write a book? But it's not that I need to, it's just that something, I feel like it's just something that I have wanted to do and that there's no time like the present. And then, I hope to also be able to turn what I've built and maybe like a little bit of who I am and who I stand on, who I am reputation wise to people. However, whatever that is, that I can build the sort of a business around that in a way and do something that is, helpful for women, mothers, business owners.
It's in the works. You're figuring out what the thing you have to give is in that really business-ified way.
Yeah. And luckily I have great partners that I'm working with and brainstorming all kinds of potentially big ideas. So we'll see.
Nice. Okay. Next question. Advice, lightning round, a few different questions. We'll go one by one. What's your advice to anybody just creating content for the internet generally, regardless of platform, topic, whatever, advice to people creating content for the internet?
My advice to those people is to pick a theme and be consistent.
Good advice. I think the picking a theme, people never know what they want to do. You gotta be specific. It can always change later. How about specifically for Instagram? Is there any different advice or is it just same thing? Just pick a theme and go.
Yeah, I think it's the same thing. I couldn't really speak to anything else.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that's the hard part about doing this series is I think at the end of the day, the only piece of advice that matters is like, just do it. Like
100%. Like there's nothing like you could gather all of the information and all of the strategies and all the tips and tricks and industry secrets that you think that you need to start whatever it is that you're going to eventually be ready to start. And none of it really matters at all unless you just start fucking doing it.
How about, is there anything you regret the past 6 years? Like something you should have done earlier or like, oh, I wish I never posted that video, et cetera. Any misstep you look back on?
No, I will say something pretty cliche in this moment where it's just, I think that like all mistakes are good mistakes in a way that it's like, if you did do anything that was like cringy, if you will, I can't say cringe anymore because you now have to cringe at your cringe. Any of that stuff or, you know, I don't think that there's any like content that, okay, I will say actually now thinking of this, I think that there is like, this sort of feeling that, some creators feel like they have to, and get a lot of pressure from audience to comment on anything and everything, you know, so things that have nothing to do with your content. And I think that I, what I've, one thing that I would say that I know now is that I will just kind of stay in my lane. You know what I mean? And just, not try to take on too much with offering my opinion or advice or any of that on anything that doesn't have to do with my regular stream of content. And, that just because you have a platform, I do not believe that that makes you obligated or accountable for speaking to everything that's happening.
Yeah. What is your, then, I'm always curious. I like to ask everyone this. What's your responsibility to your audience?
Geez, I don't know that I have a responsibility to them at the end of the day outside of, you know, I just, the one thing I wouldn't want to sell anybody on something that I couldn't stand behind. That's the only thing that I feel personally responsible for towards them, or that could be like potentially harmful. So
back to the integrity.
Yeah. But if beyond that, like in terms of like, I don't know, not offending anyone or anything like that, I can't promise that. I can't promise that I'm always going to say the right thing or be the exact type of content that everybody needs at the time that they need it or whatever, because that's just not possible. But yeah, I think that those things that I could have control over is probably my one area of responsibility as a content creator.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Okay, what is it? 5 and a half years of doing this, the Instagram side at least. 5 and a half years from now, are you still doing it? Where are you with this? What's changed? What's the same?
Yeah, I think that my goal would be in the next 5 years to be sort of independent from, or I should say completely non-dependent on Instagram, and to have kind of created something in and of itself outside of Instagram that represents me as a creator, as a business, and as something that I can monetize without needing to push it via Instagram. And that I hope to be able to use Instagram, you know, strictly pretty much as a creative space for me to share things that make me laugh or that I just feel like I want to share.
Yeah, that's good. Because like you said, the demographic, your main demographic is like you fall within it. It was like the 35 to 44, or whatever. So like maybe in 10 years, the main demographic is 45 to 54 or whatever. And it like keeps growing.
I think that it will kind of be my demographic, like who I am. That's who I will probably attract, because I'm not the toddler lady. You know, just talked about how treacherous toddlers were when I had toddlers. It's that is something I'm not quite sure. I couldn't tell you exactly what my content will look like by the time.
Impossible.
Yeah, but I do hope to graduate from Reels one day, and that and that maybe, you know, maybe the content at some point is scripted. You know, maybe it's a real piece of written entertainment that's on the screen.
I mean, I imagine you can't talk about this too much, but I did hear you say it's another review. There's a scripted pilot in the works or something like that. I don't know what's going on there.
Yeah, but I've had conversations with producers and thoughts of you know, maybe turning something into a show or something like that. So God only knows at this point. One day at a time. You gotta get through a book first.
Which could take a couple of years, but it'll be good. All right. Where should the people find you?
People mostly find me at Big Time Adulting on Instagram, all one word.
Perfect. Cool. Well, this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. I have been your host, Francis Zier. Our guest today has been Caitlin Murray of, one more time, Big Time Adulting. Thank you, Caitlin, for joining us. Thank you, listener, for sticking around. And if you enjoyed this episode, it would help us out if you rated us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I'll see you next week.